Medical Breakthroughs, the research journey. Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Caroline Burden, and you're about to join me on a journey into the fascinating world of medical breakthroughs. But not just any breakthroughs. We're diving into the personal stories, the setbacks, the you will not believe this moments behind the cutting edge research happening right here at Leeds Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust. Coming up in this episode,
we have become increasingly aware that baby's health doesn't start at the time of birth. It's been going on for several months before that in their mum's womb. And the things that can happen during pregnancy have a profound impact on the baby, not just at birth, but throughout their early and later lives.
That's Mr. Nigel Simpson. In this episode, we're going to find out about how Leeds became one of the first hospitals to open a clinic dedicated to preventing preterm births. We'll discover how genetic testing at birth and anonymous health data is giving researchers new tools to support babies and their families from day one.
We all think of researchers, sometimes sort of mad scientists in the labs conjuring up odd treatments or discoveries that are sort of a bit mind-blowing. Actually, research is just part of normal clinical care. And it's really important to understand what that means, because many of our mums under our care, we approach to take part in studies. And research is very much part of the fabric of the care that we provide. So much of research is actually just observing, just finding out what happens in a particular context, because in doing that in a measured way, we have a much better way of understanding a particular condition or response to treatment in a way that we wouldn't normally have the time or the precision to do when delivering regular care. So much research is simply observing. There is the next tier of research, which is starting to say, okay, we have several treatments which we know we offer mums. Now, is there one of these that is better in a particular context or with a particular group of mums? And so we do research in that way to sort of to try and work out what types of treatment are more appropriate in certain circumstances. And then there's a sort of third layer of research where we are assessing new tests or new therapies to see whether these are better at picking up conditions at an earlier stage where we're more able to intervene and make a difference, or whether new therapies are an improvement upon what we are able to offer at the moment. So there are a whole range of different types of research, and certainly this has seen an uplift in the ways in which we are able to care for mums across the UK. We know that in our, what we call the NIHR, the National Institute for Health and Care Research, we have a mum joining a research study every 3 minutes of every hour, of every day, of every week, of every year. 200,000 mums have chosen to take part in a research study in this past year alone. It shows the altruism that women have. They recognize that there is a pressing need, that they want their care to improve. They want their peers' care to improve. They want it the same for their children as well. And there is a deep interest in that in our mums. So this is something that's happening all around the UK, and it's particularly important to the women here in our communities in Leeds. We know that simply by taking part in clinical research, it's not only perfectly safe, but you're likely to have better health outcomes than if you do not take part in research. And hospitals that are active in research are much safer places to be cared for than hospitals who do not. So that's why the CQC, for example, part of their remit is to ask when they come around, well, what's going on in terms of research? Are you active? Do you offer the opportunity for women to participate in studies which are relevant to them. And that's why it's a really important part of our care culture, if you like, that research is there. And so when mums come to our antenatal clinics, they will see lots of research studies, literature about that. They will have research midwives and doctors approaching them and saying, look, you could be suitable to take part in this vital research. Do you want to do that? So it's part and parcel of the fabric we have here in our care and needs.
And these research projects make active differences, real life, real world differences, don't they?
Well, I think one of the most dramatic examples was when COVID came, and we had no idea about what this meant for not just everybody, but for expectant mums in particular. We had no idea what it meant. And it required that kind of coordinated approach to be able to say, yes, this is what happens to mums in pregnancy if they catch COVID, but also allowed us to work out whether the treatments we are offering other populations, non-pregnant populations, whether they would be equally effective in pregnancy. And they were. And if it wasn't for that vital research that was done at pace and at scale, we wouldn't have been able to respond and care for our mums in the way that we are only able to do. So that was really important. Another good example would be the care of mums who require help with the birth of their baby at the end of a long labor, for example, with forceps. One of the studies that has completed showed that giving antibiotics on a routine basis in that situation halved the number of delayed wound healings that occurred if antibiotics weren't used. Now, we wouldn't have been able to appreciate that if we hadn't been able to carry out a study and mums hadn't been willing to participate. As a consequence of that, this kind of care is far safer. The recovery from the birth is far quicker for mums as a consequence. So these are just two examples of where research was able to make a difference in the lives of the mums we serve.
And when it comes to research that is based on sort of medication, is it harder to do that research within maternity? Because there's an element of testing on my baby. Like, is it harder to get research companies involved?
What's important to remember that in the UK, we have a very high regulatory bar. You can't just sort of say, oh, I just want to see what impact this drug is going to have in pregnancy. And that goes all the way from vitamins to antibiotics to anything else you care to say. They all are carefully studied by the regulators. An assessment of whether there could be any potential harm to the mother or her unborn baby. And that is well before anything comes near anybody within a maternity care setting. So mums can rely on that process to know that if they're invited to participate in a study that could involve medication, that it's undergone the highest standards of investigation to make sure not just the medication, but the process by which the study is taking part will be to the highest standards. And that is, as I say, tighter in the UK than most other countries in the world. But that's really important because when the results of these studies are published, we can have faith that they are true and that they apply to our mums here in the UK. Because clearly, when you carry out a study, it has to have scalability for your particular group of mums. So, yes, I think mums, of course, are going to be apprehensive about taking part in a study which might involve aspects of their and their baby's health, but they can be assured that these have all been thought through and examined independently before they come to you. And that's one of the great things about the NIHR, is that it is able to provide that, what we call governance, that assurance of quality and of safety, that we feel confident that mums can safely take that information on board and participate. And women want to do it. You're quite right when you say, is the pharma industry interested in mums and pregnancy? I think, generally speaking, they're not that interested. There's far more money to be made in looking at chest pain in men of my age than there are in mums with, say, blood pressure problems in pregnancy, because young women are very resilient. Their systems can cope with quite a bit, and generally speaking, death is not an outcome, whereas it would be for somebody of my age. So drug companies, you know, aren't that excited about investing a lot of money in the care of women, especially younger women in pregnancy, because they're not, the returns are not going to be great for them. However, that does not deter many from doing so. And obviously, these kinds of innovative research, we are very keen to roll out. One, for example, was the use of a test in the detection of a condition involving high blood pressure in pregnancy called preeclampsia. This is a very dangerous condition for both mother and baby, and can commonly result in a premature birth, an early birth of a small baby, and issues for mother as well as her baby. What our evaluation was able to do, and this included many mums from Leeds, it was conducted nationally, showed that this was a very effective test at picking up ahead of the sort of more clinical signs. It was able to pick this up ahead of that time, and meant that mums could be more carefully monitored as a consequence of that, and the birth more accurately predicted. Also importantly, it meant that mums who had these sort of non-specific symptoms, but in whom the test was reassuring, could be told, it's okay, you don't have this condition, you are perfectly okay to go ahead with your life and not worry about this. So the flip side, the ruling in and the ruling out of a condition as a consequence of that test, and that was, I say, this is a novel test. It's now progressed to being a standard of care in all our maternity units in the UK, but it wouldn't have happened if mums hadn't been invited to participate and hadn't willingly given their permission to do so.
Now, one of the studies that I found really fascinating is the generation study. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, I think, again, this is the best of British. It really is. Because we have a relatively tightly regulated and well-networked health service, we're able to do these studies, which in another context would be very, very difficult to carry out. What the generation study is essentially doing is it involves approaching a mum during pregnancy and asking her if we can collect a sample of blood from either the placenta or from her baby. Obviously, the blood from the placenta is the baby's, which would be sent off for a genetic screening. This screening, this reliable screening, is able to pick up more than 200 conditions, which we know are not common, but they have a huge impact on the baby's future life. Many of the conditions are slowly progressing and can only be picked up when it's too late to really effectively help the baby in any significant way. And so if we are able to pick up the condition from a genetic test, that allows that AB to be identified and to receive the support and intervention, which is likely to lead to a better and more timely outcome for them, and of course, for their family as well. So it's a very easy study. The samples are sent to an independent laboratory run by Genomics England, and a result comes back as to whether any of these 200 or so conditions are present or not. If they are, then the parents are contacted, the NHS referrals are made, and that baby and their parents are seen and counseled in, as I say, a more timely fashion, knowing that a particular condition is present and can receive the sort of support and intervention that's going to be vital. Now, of course, there'll be some worry for parents when in that waiting period, but the security that brings may be outweighed. And to a certain extent, we do it already. You know, babies have, and your baby probably had a heel prick test done a few days after birth to pick up. It was just one of several conditions to do with thyroid function and what have you. This is like that test, which was introduced in the 80s. Okay. Well, this is the same test for the 21st century. This is something that's going to be the face of the future, because we now have the technology to be able to effectively screen, as I say, for these over 200 conditions in the one heel prick. So the generation study is wanting to ascertain, is this possible? Can we do this in a selected number of centres around the UK, one of which I'm pleased to say is in Leeds? Because if it's possible to do so in these settings, and we're probably going to be approaching up to 100,000 parents on this matter, then it's something that the country can adopt fully for all babies. But we have to understand what are the potential teething problems. For example, are we going to be overwhelmed in terms of our services, our pediatric services, from finding out more cases than we thought? Well, I think that's unlikely, but we have to demonstrate it. And in these days, where money is tight in the public sector, it's important to demonstrate that a program like this is effective and is in the interests of our mums and their babies, simply because we pick up a condition well before it becomes too late to retrieve health for that baby.
And that's so significant and so incredible to have the ability to be able to do that, to be able to make that change just from a simple blood test.
And it couldn't be done without, as I say, the NIHR. And this is, again, a public body which nobody knows much about. For example, what it means that in Leeds we have 10 research midwives who are employed by the NIHR, who are the ways in which we offer these studies to our mums. They are particularly skilled in research. They understand all about the studies that they are offering. They know how to conduct the study in the right way, in an ethical way, and in a way that is scientifically rigorous and can be trusted. And that's all, as I say, down to this network called the NIHR, which is present in every maternity unit, every hospital in the country, and which is able to offer these studies in a way that mums can understand and take part in, and in the results of which can shape public policy in the ways that I've already described, because we can trust the results. That's the really important thing. If it was just mad Dr. Simpson doing a study in Leeds, and he came up and said, well, I've just discovered this, people would say, well, okay, you know, possibly, but, you know, we don't know much about Dr. Simpson. If it's done as a network within an organization like the NIHR, we can trust those results. And more importantly, the civil servants and politicians who determine where our money is spent can take can take heed of that as well. And that's so important. That trustworthiness is so important.
So how many trials and research projects happen within the department at one time or over a year? You know, how many different sorts of projects?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, at the moment, we have over 20 studies running at the moment. These range from these sort of very big studies like Generation or Baby, which we may discuss in a moment, down to very small studies, which may only involve perhaps 1 or 2 months a year because the conditions are that uncommon. So it involves, as I say, the range of conditions that affect the mums within Leeds. We've chosen those from over 180 studies that are currently on what's called the portfolio, the NIHR's portfolio within reproductive health and childbirth, because we feel these are singularly important to the health of our mums and their babies here in Leeds. They incorporate, you know, things like high blood pressure in pregnancy, diabetes in pregnancy, baby health after and during labor. They look at anesthetics that are used during birth, and they include many other studies within women's health, such as endometriosis. We have a center of excellence of endometriosis here in Leeds, and so many women will come to Leeds for their care. And in this study, in this area, there are many unresolved questions about how we can improve the health of mums, of women with endometriosis. And so we have several studies that are looking at different treatments according to the problems that women describe when they have endometriosis.
So looking at the baby study then, can you talk us through just the headline of that?
Yes, so this is, again, is a very easy study to take part in, because when a mum is approached, usually early in pregnancy, but not always at that stage, what we are asking her is whether we can have access to her healthcare data through the pregnancy and through the early years of that baby's life. We have become increasingly aware that baby's health doesn't start at the time of birth. It's been going on for several months before that in their mum's womb. And the things that can happen during pregnancy have a profound impact on the baby, not just at birth, but throughout their early and later lives. Now, the best way to examine that most closely is to be able to approach mums early in pregnancy and say, look, can we have permission to, in an anonymized fashion, in other words, not using data that can be directed or followed back to you as an individual, can we follow what happens during your pregnancy and in the life of your baby in their early years? Because what that will do is it will help us understand why, for example, some babies will develop asthma, or why some children find it difficult to succeed at school, or perhaps in later life, some of these so-called birth cohorts, that's the sort of technical name for them, have been able to follow babies well through adolescence into their 20s and 30s and 40s, and have discovered that things that have happened during pregnancy have been a signal for what is likely to happen in later life. For example, heart disease, for example, mental health, for example, the tendency to develop diabetes. And that's tremendously important because it can then put the focus on how we can care for our mums most effectively at the time when their baby's health is being shaped. And for those individuals, how during their lives, their lifestyle can be adjusted to reduce the chance of them developing problems in later life. So again, it all starts with these observational studies where these correlations and associations are examined. I think many people listening will be aware of the Bourne and Bradford study. This was a very large study that was done in the early noughties, and it examined over 12,000 babies born to mums in Bradford. That has been immensely helpful in understanding what predictors there are of later health and happiness, and has shaped policy within Bradford. So, for example, the clean air zone that is in Bradford at the moment is as a direct consequence of work that was carried out using those birth cohorts, because what the researchers were able to identify was that mums who are exposed to higher levels of environmental pollutants, their babies tended to suffer as a consequence. We might have suspected that, but we wouldn't have been able to prove it in a way that would have affected public policy in the way that it did. So that was an example of how, for example, that study in Bradford has made a big difference. Now, we want the same benefits of that kind of observational study being applied here in Leeds, or at least we want to offer it to our mothers and their families here in Leeds to take part in that, because we feel the same benefits will accrue for us specifically in Leeds. We want to understand how our communities can be stronger and healthier, and our children can grow up in an environment which is supportive and gives them the best chance of success. This study, which starts with that consultation at your booking visit in pregnancy, is the beginning of that journey. The other power of that is that, our site is the Born and Bred in Leeds site, Baby Leeds. We have a large network of other sites who are conducting exactly the same type of observational study. So we have sites, for example, in Wakefield, in Doncaster. They're starting in Hull and in York. So there's a very strong Yorkshire interest in all of this. So again, what's important for us in Yorkshire? That really affects, for example, how we deliver health services within this part of the country. But nationally as well, we have sites in Nottingham and in Bury and in East London, which are all, if you like, working together with these larger numbers, gives us much greater ideas to whether the issues that we've identified here in Leeds are the same that they're facing those in East London. So again, it shows the benefit of what we can ascertain here within our locality, but also how that can influence national policy as well. It allows the ability for other investigators to say, okay, you've got that sort of conduit in there. We have a particular interest in this group of mums. Can we approach that group of mums in your wider group? And offer them the chance to take part in studies. So we've recently been awarded a large grant to look at the impact of plant-based diets in the health of mothers and their babies. But we can only do that because we are already approaching a large number of mums, both here and around the country. And within that, there will be mums who have a plant-based diet who will say, yes, let's see how this works out. And that will, again, allow us to care for and advise those mums and their families in terms of the benefits of what they're doing, but also to say, well, look, that there may be a chance you may be low on this supplement or that vitamin or whatever, and that can be easily addressed so that that lifestyle can be preserved.
I imagine as well, much like the generation study, it gives you the chance to get one step ahead in that if you are if the results are showing that actually if a mother has had preeclampsia, then the chances are in later life the baby is going to be more susceptible to X, Y, and Z. Well, then those are those things that can then be, you know, looked out for and, you know, treated, or, you know, lifestyle can be changed to do the best that you can to either prevent that happening or to catch it early.
It gives us knowledge. It gives us greater certainty that as not only as a group, but what more importantly, as an individual, these are the issues I need to be aware of in my life. Whether I choose to do anything about it is another matter. There's obviously that issue between public policy and individual choice. But what we can't have is a situation where there is no freedom for the individual to exert a choice. So a classic is smoking, for example. You know, we say we know that when we study groups of people who smoked, that they're at a higher chance of developing a whole range of health conditions. Now, that's been well established. I mean, we just take it as granted now. It wasn't in the 50s until these observational cohorts were done, actually originally in doctors, strangely enough, where it was found that the doctors who smoked were more likely to have major health issues. We just take that as accepted now. We're doing it in a similar way in these birth cohorts. And you're quite right. It allows people to be more aware of the consequences of a particular condition that they've encountered or a lifestyle that they adopt, and also allows the opportunity to say, well, look, we can restore or retrieve or mitigate these issues in these other particular ways. It's giving information that's apt and appropriate for that individual, which is what we'd want for ourselves, really.
And you can find out more in the show notes. Coming up on our next episode.
The main thing is the mammogram has to be diagnostic. So that means we can read it to make a diagnosis. And in cases where things have gone not the way that was planned and the images aren't really of great quality, the AI algorithm can flag in real time, you may want to consider repeating an image.
Yes, using AI to check your breasts. We're going to hear from Dr. Nisha Sharma in our next episode. She's an expert in breast screening, in radiology, and in AI. She's a consultant radiologist and the director of the breast screening program for Leeds and Wakefield. And she will give us the lowdown of the use of this latest technology. Medical Breakthroughs, The Research Journey is an Under the Mast audio production.